This is the Downeast Journal on Public Radio East. Agriculture is big business in North Carolina, especially in the eastern part of the state. It's a $78 billion industry and accounts for 640,000 jobs statewide. North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services Public Affairs Director Brian Long says 17% of North Carolina's total income comes from agriculture, with tobacco, soybean, corn, cotton, and greenhouse nursery plants the major cash crops.
When Hurricane Irene hit in 2011, we saw such a heavy impact on crop production for these crops is because so much of the production was concentrated in the eastern part of the state, and of course that's where Irene did most of the damage.
Long estimates that 75% of these cash crops are grown here in eastern North Carolina. According to the most recent statistics released in 2012 by the Department of Agriculture, tobacco is the state's number one cash crop, generating $754 million annually.
For many years, tobacco had been trailing the greenhouse nursery stock as the top cash crop. But thanks to exceedingly good yields in 2012, plus a really good price for the crop, it was able to jump back into that top spot, which is something, you know, North Carolina for years and years was known for tobacco farming. And it shouldn't really come as a surprise that it would jump back up at some point.
North Carolina has always been the largest tobacco producer in the country, but over the past decade, there's been a significant decrease in the number of tobacco farms operating in the state. In 2004, there were nearly 8,000 tobacco farms. 10 years later, that number is about 1,600. The cause of the decrease, the tobacco buyout program. For decades, there were limits on how much tobacco could be grown by individuals owning allotments. Executive Vice President of the Tobacco Growers Association of North Carolina, Graham Boyd, says many local farmers stopped growing tobacco when the federal tobacco quota program was phased out in 2004.
As we had absentee land ownership occurring, the quota belonged to more and more people who were no longer growing tobacco through various trends and attritions that were occurring as people moved away from the farm. So with the success of what is known, you know, commonly as the tobacco buyout, it decoupled that arrangement and thereby allowing tobacco to be grown absent of a quota system program.
The Fair and Equitable Tobacco Reform Act of 2004 was enacted, implementing the buyout program in which farmers were compensated for the tobacco they were no longer allowed to grow. As a result of the legislation, many farmers decided to grow alternate crops and lessen their dependence on tobacco. As a result, there's been a decline in the amount of tobacco growers in the state, but the remaining farmers are growing more leaf. Now, the average tobacco farm in North Carolina is 100 acres, or four times the size of the average tobacco farm a decade ago. North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services Public Affairs Director Brian Long.
There's a well-known saying in North Carolina that the only thing more lucrative than an acre of tobacco was another acre of tobacco. It used to be a very stable, lucrative crop for farmers, and it did not require a lot of acreage to grow it.
Many of the growers that decided to stay with tobacco farming used the buyout money to invest in their facilities and expand their operations.
In 2005, which was the first year after the quota program ended, ever since then, acreage and production have been on the rebound. And in fact, last year, 2013, our farmers harvested almost 182,000 acres of tobacco. And that is the most since 1999. And this year, farmers have indicated they plan to plant more than 183,000 acres of tobacco.
Long says the reason why the tobacco industry has stabilized is because North Carolina tobacco is more competitive in a worldwide market.
The export market for North Carolina tobacco is very strong. The state exported $766 million worth of tobacco in 2012.
Much of the tobacco that North Carolina grows is sent to the Far East. China is the number one grower of tobacco in the world and also has the largest consumer market.
Domestic demand for tobacco products has, you know, continued to drop and is not what it was, you know, 30 years ago. But in countries that have developing economies, particularly in China, there is a tremendous demand for tobacco products, and they are wanting a better quality product than what they had in the past, and they realize that the way to do that is to use North Carolina tobacco.
Officials with the state's Department of Agriculture have cultivated a relationship with Chinese tobacco companies, holding trade missions in 2009 and 2011. Last year, China Tobacco International opened an office in eastern North Carolina to serve as the base for its leaf buying operation. Long says North Carolina tobacco is in high demand because of its superior quality and competitive prices.
Our farmers, they know how to grow it. Our researchers have worked on new technologies and techniques and ways to improve the crop. Our agricultural leadership in the state is very attuned to tobacco and knows a lot about it as well. We have the climate and the soils here that make for growing really high-quality tobacco. And we have the ability now to sell it in a world market in a more competitive way.
While the distribution of locally grown tobacco worldwide remains a viable venture, the industry is facing some challenges with the advent of e-cigarettes. Since electronic cigarettes are forecasted to surpass the sale of traditional cigarettes by the end of the decade, Executive Vice President of Tobacco Growers Association of North Carolina, Graham Boyd, says North Carolina growers may have to shift their focus to growing tobacco for the purpose of extracting nicotine for e-cigarettes.
This is an emerging market as it ties itself back to tobacco. Again, tobacco in a different form or tobacco in a different purpose and use than what we conventionally understand tobacco to be, but still nonetheless, you know, our growers are the best at producing tobacco, and we want to recognize that if this is an emerging market or an emerging market opportunity, how do we capture the momentum that allows us to capitalize on the economics?
Boyd says the impacts e-cigarettes will have on the tobacco industry still remains unclear. But one company is already constructing a nicotine extraction facility in eastern North Carolina. The Virginia Tobacco Company, in partnership with Avoca Incorporated, will produce liquid nicotine in Mary Hill in Bertie County. The company expects to begin commercial production in July. A disturbing national trend involving heroin use has made its way into eastern North Carolina. The Pitt County Sheriff's Office has decided to take a proactive step that could save the lives of some opioid abusers. George Olson has more.
What has happened nationally is happening locally as well. Recent years have seen a resurgence in the use of heroin in response to growing addiction levels with less available and more expensive prescription drugs. That trend became a reality in Pitt County in recent years.
When people are not able to get those prescription pills that they've become abused to, unfortunately, sometimes they turn to street drugs, which would be heroin, for example, which can be cheaper and more accessible.
Melissa Larson, the grants administrator for the Pitt County Sheriff's Office. People addicted to expensive prescription drugs like oxycodone are now turning to heroin for its comparative availability and lower price. It's brought a marked rise in the number of investigated cases involving heroin.
We looked at it over a 10-year trend. At the beginning of that trend, we were having every year approximately 2 to 3 cases involving heroin. In the last 2 to 3 years, we're averaging every year about 30 cases involving heroin. Those are very alarming stats for us. It tells us the magnitude of the prescription pill problem.
It's prompted the Pitt County Sheriff's Office to equip its deputies with a tool that could save lives if they come upon a case of an opioid overdose.
Deputies are commonly first responders on the scene for this type of call. Their priority is to provide scene security for EMS. So if they are first on scene and they give the go-ahead for EMS that the scene is safe, deputies are already standing there. And if they witness someone in an overdose situation and they have the drug available, why not?
The drug available, Melissa Larson is referring to, is naloxone, which is now part of the standard equipment of Pitt County Sheriff's Office patrol cars. The deputies have undergone training to recognize signs and symptoms of opioid overdose and have the authority to administer naloxone in those cases. Deputies have had access to naloxone, also known as Narcan, which can counteract the effects of heroin and other opioids, for about 2 weeks now. The Pitt County Sheriff's Office is the first law enforcement agency in the state to make naloxone a standard accessory in their vehicles. Part of the impetus for making naloxone available is the range of territory that Pitt County emergency officials have to cover.
Being that we are in a rural community, EMS response time could be anywhere from 7 to 12 to 15 minutes. So you've got a deputy standing by waiting for EMS to get to the patient's side. So if he has Narcan as a tool in his tool belt, if you will, he can go ahead and deliver that Narcan to him. This is someone who's in respiratory distress. They're not getting enough oxygen. It's a dangerous situation for that patient. So we want to be able to help them if we can.
It's a low-risk treatment that deputies can provide. Melissa Larson says if a deputy misdiagnoses an unconscious person as overdosed on opioids and administers naloxone, it would have no effect on the person as, if it has no opioid receptors to block, it's just basically there. In more direct vernacular,
you can administer Narcan on me right now and it's not going to have any effect on me.
It's also, at least initially, a low-cost treatment that could prevent death.
So the Community Care Plan of Eastern Carolina actually provided all the Narcan kits. They gave us over 120 kits for our law enforcement officers, and it's only sworn law enforcement officers in our agency that will carry the Narcan. That includes patrol and SROs. And we devised a nice kit that has two vials of Narcan in it, and then it also has the nasal syringe and the adapter. As for cost, we speculate the entire cost of the kit is going to be under $25.
Larson speculates that when that runs out, purchasing individual doses would be in the $10 to $12 range. Training also wasn't too time intensive. Over 120 sheriff's office personnel spent about an hour viewing a video, going over the signs and symptoms of opioid overdose, then learning how to administer the nasal spray. Naloxone has been available to sheriff's deputies for about 2 weeks and so far hasn't been needed. But given spiraling upward numbers of heroin cases experienced in Pitt County in the last few years, it appears to be a tool that will be used all too often. Melissa Larson is the Grants Administrator for the Pitt County Sheriff's Office. I'm George Olson.
The North Carolina Symphony is presenting a summer concert series of 10 free outdoor concerts around the state. Six of those performances will be here in eastern North Carolina. This week, Mac McKee spoke with the Senior Director of Statewide Development for the North Carolina Symphony, Rob Madry, about the opening concert in the Colonial Capital, which will include some well-known classical works and an original composition by an eastern North Carolina musician.
The North Carolina Symphony Concerts in your community, that's kicking off in June. And, of course, June 1st, it's going to be in New Bern. What are some of the pieces that you'll be performing at this June 1st performance at Tryon Palace?
We are doing two particular pieces. We're doing three pieces. We open with a piece called by Aaron Copland. It is titled An Outdoor Overture, which is Aaron Copland's take on just being in the great outdoors, and what better way to start a concert for an outdoor setting like at the Palace and many places down east. We are also performing a piece called Sketches from Pinehurst. Carteret County native Terry Mazesco, and who's also our principal bass trombone, composed this piece 9 years ago in 2005 when the U.S. Open was last in North Carolina in Pinehurst. As many of your listeners may know, the U.S. Opens, both of them, the men and women's, is being presented in Pinehurst in June, and we, to honor that occasion, we are performing this work in its entirety in many of the places where we're performing our concerts in your community series. And then lastly, we are closing with the time-honored, very popular Beethoven Symphony No. 5. This piece we've performed a few times around North Carolina in January, and with its popularity, We thought we would perform it in its entirety for our summer outdoor concert series.
Now, how do you determine what pieces will be going into a particular performance?
A large part of it is trying to, are there opportunities for us to honor something that's happening? Are we looking towards, you know, what would the audience like to hear? So this particular summer, with the Sketches from Pinehurst work, the sole reason for performing that in its entirety is the U.S. Opens. And it's got so many elements about North Carolina's history, the history of golf, if you will. We have performed one particular element out of that work called Building Community, and it's such a cinematic piece and a very quick and fast-paced piece. We have performed it outdoors at the Palace and places around the state in summers past. The Beethoven 5 concert is actually, I will say, new for us. We do not often play works in their entirety. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is about a 30-minute work with four movements. But it is each movement, I think, is going to be familiar to many of our listeners in the PRE listening area, and it's going to be something that many folks will enjoy.
Who will be the main conductor for the performance?
In New Bern, our music director, Grant Llewellyn, will be conducting. He has conducted there the last several summers, and we are delighted that he's going to be really opening our entire series of concerts in your community by performing in New Bern on June 1.
Just in case you cannot make it to the June 1st performance in New Bern, don't despair, because there's going to be a couple of other performances right here in eastern North Carolina as well.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for mentioning that. On Thursday, June 12th, the orchestra returns to Jacksonville at the Riverfront Crossing Park in Jacksonville. Concert start time is 7:30. In that particular case, Grant Llewellyn is also conducting the orchestra. On Thursday, June 19th, we come to Kinston, North Carolina as part of the Sands in the Streets series. That concert will be at 7 o'clock. In the Pearson Park area in downtown Kinston.
Now, will the same performance that will be coming up in June 1st, will they also get a similar performance at Kinston and Jacksonville performances?
Yes, we'll be repeating that program in all three locations, and all three locations are free and open to the public.
Well, I certainly thank you for your time, and good luck on your concert series this summer.
Thank you very much, Mac. I appreciate your having me.
The Down East Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members and partnership with Vidant Health, featuring cancer care navigators, specialists trained to answer questions and coordinate cancer care. Learn more online at vidanthealth.com/navigator.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. What an absolutely beautiful time of year it is. So many things are in bloom, and everything is growing wildly. It's the perfect time to look around and determine what things you might want to add to your yard to add beauty or color or height, maybe even texture. Whatever it is your yard needs to make it the spectacular place you want to live. And the reason now is such a good time to do this is because you can get a limited feel for how something's going to grow or look here in coastal North Carolina just by reading about it in a catalog or seeing a small plant in a pot at a nursery. But if you're driving down the street and you see a spectacular crepe myrtle, stop and ask what variety it is. My favorite's Muskogee. Or maybe you see some amazing perennial coneflowers in bloom. Go ahead and stop. Talk to the homeowner. See if they know what variety it is, or if they mind if you snap a picture so that you can compare it to the plants at the nursery or the catalog. Similarly, Look for plants that aren't doing so well. Maybe you see that all the Bradford pears on your street were split in half in the last hurricane. Well, that should tell you something about whether to plant a Bradford pear here on the coast. Or you may note that hedges of really fast-growing evergreens grow fast and beautifully for a few years, but then you see many of them dying from root diseases or possibly infested with bagworms. Take that lesson home when you choose the materials for your hedge, and also keep in mind the importance of mixing three or more plant varieties into a hedge so a disease or insect doesn't march down the line and destroy them all. And in addition to just looking around at what's growing beautifully near you, consider driving to Raleigh or some other wonderful arboretum. I went to the J.C. Ralston Arboretum on the campus of NC State yesterday. Now, not every plant growing in Raleigh will do well here on the coast, but many will. What an opportunity, though, to see which plants thrive in deep shade, which need bright sun, and which ones put out the most astoundingly textured new growth in the early spring. At the Arboretum, you can see everything from full-size trees that will form the bones of your yard to the smallest, most spectacular flowering perennials, plus shrubs, bulbs, corms, just everything you can imagine. And it gives you so many marvelous ideas. Your yard can be exactly the yard you want to have, but choose carefully based on knowledge and understanding of what does well where you live, or you may find yourself disappointed. So go out, drive around, look at what's doing really well in our area, and start planning your long-term yard future. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Dreading the rest of the day because you've got so much to do? Take a minute for yourself now. Commentator Joan Karas has advice you'll likely take great pleasure in heeding.
Fortunately for our economy, most of us adhere to a Puritan work ethic. Recent articles point to the lengthy work week of Americans who normally put in 50 to 70 hour weeks on the job. Sayings that praise work are well known. Never put off till tomorrow what you can do today. And how about, hard work never killed anybody? Or, man works from sun to sun, but woman's work is never done. We could discuss that last one all day, but my favorite comes from Jerome K. Jerome, author of Three Men in a Boat, a British humor classic. J.K. Jerome said, "It is impossible to enjoy idling thoroughly unless one has plenty of work to do." Listen to that. Enjoy idling thoroughly. How refreshing. We should reconsider the topic of work. This may sound odd, but let's begin by appreciating the many joys of a bathroom, where you can care for every inch of yourself in peace. That is, if you're not a mother, in which case, good luck. Remember the moisturizing lotion that protects your skin, your largest organ, one that needs regular love and attention. While waiting for nails or toenails to dry, you can read to keep your mind active, thereby staving off mental deterioration. I have a shelf of books and crossword puzzles in the bathroom for the sake of my mind, and I take my phone in there, too. A bathroom is a place of healthful restoration, sort of a human garage. While you are in the bathroom, it is impossible to dust, clean out the freezer, weed the garden, paint the bottom of your boat, or do anything else known as work. This is just simple logic. Next, consider morning, the time when people get up and begin their work. In our minds, we run through the various jobs on our schedules, wondering if we even have time for lunch. On a weekend, the lawn and yard offer endless work opportunities. Weeding, pruning, raking, mulching, spraying for bugs and diseases, fertilizing absolutely everything, cursing the fire ants that eternally invade your space. The list of chores in any yard goes on and on. Do you want to do this work? Can this work wait until another time? If the answer is yes, it can wait, then stay in bed. That's right. Stay in bed. After all, the amount of rest and sleep we get is critical. Medical studies have shown that American workers do not get sufficient sleep, and as a result have more physical and psychological problems than folks who regularly get plenty of sleep. Clearly, our working lifestyle is turning us into unhealthy, mentally sluggish, terminally tired human beings. We really ought to spend more healthful, restorative time in the bathroom and in bed. For starters, how about a nice long soak in your tub where you can ponder work, what must be done, and what can be ignored?
Joan Karas is a children's book author who lives in Beaufort. Her latest book is Magic at the Bed and Biscuit, published by Candlewick Press.